Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, and Tony and I are really excited today to talk about beef and grilling and all kinds of fantastic things to do cooking-wise outside. We're going to get started here.
Cindy Lou, you love the grill, don't you?
I do. You know, I think it comes from working inside of a kitchen for all these years.
You've been trapped.
Dungeons and, you know, wherever. And the idea of standing outside on a sunny day, or even if it was raining out. I've grilled in the rain before outside. My grill at my house is right outside of my kitchen door, which makes it really fantastic because it's very close to all the things that I need while I'm grilling. So, yeah, my dad was in the meat business all of his life, and my grandfather and great-grandfather were butchers, so had butcher shops. So, you know, it's always been a big thing at our table, particularly eating beef.
So when I call you the butcher's daughter, it's pretty darn legitimate.
It is legitimate. My father was indeed grew up in a butcher shop.
We're watching him give you lessons on breaking down a baby lamb. Springs ago, mm-hmm. in your kitchen. It was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, you know, when you see a 80-year-old man showing my cooks how to pull apart a lamb, that's pretty cool. It really is. It's, there's so many great cuts, especially on a young lamb, from the legs, either roasting them whole or grilling them. But really, let's talk about beef and some of the questions about beef.
One of the things you do well is you make sure that all the basics happen the way they're supposed to happen. So can we start by talking about how to grill properly, correctly?
Yes.
Because you see these beautiful grills in some home improvement store, and then you go to someone's house for a cookout, and you see what looks like, you know, something has been through a car crash with all kinds of carbon built up on it and everything else, and you're like, really? You're going to put food on that and cook it? No.
So what's
the right way to go about setting up your grill, preparing to grill on it, And the how-tos of maintaining it so that you do get great product from your grill.
Absolutely. So you need, first of all, you want to check your propane, whatever you're using. Make sure you have plenty of it. And, you don't want to be disappointed halfway through your meal and realize that you're out of gas. So that's kind of a silly thing to say, but seriously, it's happened to me before. I've gotten out there, turned on my grill, and gotten it up to full temperature and realized I was out of propane. So I always have an extra tank, actually, on hand.
Do you prefer propane to charcoal?
I do not prefer one or the other. I think they're all great ways to cook. I also love it if you have the opportunity to grill with wood and get that wonderful smoke aspect into it. And there are a lot of different, you know, we could talk about this forever. I think one of the things that's, you know, there's so many different ways to grill. This is an ancient way of cooking. You walk in the footsteps of, you know, many people in history and many different cultures when you talk about grilling. If you're going to talk about, you know, I know you wanted to say something about kebab later on with Middle Eastern cooking and, you know, Southern, you know, pit barbecue. I mean, there's just all kinds of different ways to grill. Main thing is to make sure your grill is clean. So you need a good grill brush, a good wire brush that has a good face on it, and you can really clean that grill very well. I think the biggest thing when you're thinking about grilling is think of your grill as a saute pan. Don't think of it as something that's outside, that's this, you know, thing that just sits there. Think of it as a saute pan. Would you put, if you had carbon in a saute pan, would you put food in there? Absolutely not. Would you put any kind of food in a dirty saute pan? Absolutely not. I would bring it up to temperature first. I usually turn on my grill on high if I have a gas grill. So if you're working with charcoal or working with wood, get it hot and then really, really brush it down very, very well. And I do that a couple of times. And then before you're ready to cook, you want to oil your grill down. Now, when you go to oil it down, we use just a kitchen towel, something that you can discard, you're not concerned with. We tie it up and we dip it in corn oil. Very few people are allergic to corn. So, it's a good kind of neutral oil to oil your grill down with.
Not to be completely stupid, mm-hmm. but how do you manage to do that and not set it on fire?
And that's the whole thing. You know, you want that towel not to be completely saturated. You want it to have a light amount of oil on it. And you want to just lightly oil your grill. And then you're ready to cook.
You do have, if you're not careful about it, you do have the possibility of having a flaming
flare-ups.
Torch in your hand.
Right. And also keep in mind that when you are marinating anything or any kind of quantity of oil, that you're going to have flare-ups. And flare-ups taste like kerosene. Your food suddenly tastes like kerosene. So obviously you don't want to have any flare-ups. You don't want your grill to be too hot either. You know, I think that's the next point. You know, you want to have a perfectly clean grill, and right before you're about to work on it, you want to oil it down, and you want to have some hotter spots and cooler spots. And having it on high, if you have that kind of grill, or if you are working with charcoal or wood, you know, you want to have a good heat surface, but you don't want it to be too hot.
So with the hot spots and cool spots, do you sometimes mark something, you know, almost like you would in the pan, sear it and then move it to a cooler spot cook more steadily?
Exactly. And you also want to cook evenly. So you want to turn food so that it cooks evenly on both sides. You don't want it to cook too hard on one side, and then, you know, you're not going to have an evenly cooked piece of food. The other thing that we often talk about, too, is, you know, obviously we're always very concerned about health and sanitation and having food be at the right temperature. You want to kind of, you know, really, especially if it's a larger piece of meat, you want to bring it, you know, out of the refrigerator, maybe even 15 minutes before you're about to grill it, just so that you're having, again, even cooking as it becomes a little bit warmer in temperature. And I don't want to say the word warm, but you know what I mean. You don't want it to be perfectly cold out of the refrigerator when you go to grill it.
What's the best way to check? I mean, do you just use a meat thermometer to check? Say you want to do half chickens on your grill.
The meat thermometer on a bigger piece of meat is a perfect way. You want to make sure you're going into the center of the piece of meat, you know, that you're actually using the thermometer correctly and that you've tested your thermometer. I just put my thermometer into a small pot of boiling water and make sure it's at 212 degrees, that it registers correctly at boiling point, and then you know that your thermometer is working properly and that's calibrated properly. And then if you are new to cooking, you definitely want to use a thermometer. And then the other way is, as you cook more and more, you begin to recognize if you're really touching a piece of meat, you know, filling the sides, pulling it in if it's a bigger piece of meat. You know, there are all kinds of different ways, but really, eventually, as you cook longer, you'll get to know when things are done.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Experienced grill cooks always just have the kind of, like, they can just touch with a pair of tongs or touch with a finger and be like, that's medium rare.
Absolutely.
That's medium well.
And those are people that cook, you know, a piece of meat, you know, 50 times a night. And, you know, obviously that's a tremendous amount of repetition. But, you know, the longer you cook, the better you'll get at it.
What about the basics of, like, seasoning, oil, and marinating things so that you don't have flare-ups?
I think, really, it's your own desire as to, you know, first of all, you want to think about with your marinade, do you need to add acid to it? Is it a piece of meat that maybe needs to be broken down a little bit? Or are you just looking for that flavor of the acid? Maybe it's a vinegar or fresh lemon or lime juice. So you want to decide if you really want acid in your marinade. And then, how long do I want to marinate it? Do I want to marinate it overnight? Is it a flank steak? Flank steak has some connective tissue in it. It's not a piece of beef tenderloin. A beef flank steak needs to marinate probably overnight with some acid. A piece of beef tenderloin does not need acid. I typically marinate, you know, beef tenderloin in extra virgin olive oil and some sort of herb and light salt and pepper. So it really depends on the piece of meat as to what you're going to do and as to what's in the marinade and how long.
Is there any particular thing that you can't stand grilling, you think should never be grilled, you think this is bad news grilling it?
Anything that's tough. You have to have primal cuts of meat to grill. You can't, the you know, a short rib or, you know, a tougher piece of meat needs to be braised.
The most terrifying thing of my youth that had to do with grilling is my mother became inspired one time to do a London broil. And she marinated it overnight thinking it was going to be much more tender. And it was pretty much, it was a boot. It was a boot that had Worcestershire sauce on it that we attempted to chew for about an hour. I think she could have marinated that in kerosene and it would not have broken down in any way, shape, or form.
Right. So you need primal cuts. Yes.
So what kind of cuts? What are your favorite cuts to grill? What are the best value cuts? What are the secret cuts? As the butcher's daughter, what are all the beef secrets that you should tell people?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously hamburger is going to be one of your, that's not a secret, but, you know, as far as a secret, probably a skirt steak or
not to be silly,
hanger steak, something like
that. What's important with hamburger meat?
Oh, well, with hamburger meat, it needs to be high quality beef. You know, the better the beef, the better the hamburger, and you do need some fat in there. It's just a little bit like what we're going to talk about in a minute, which is you want all meat to have some marbling to it.
So for hamburger meat, you see these people, in the grocery store, you see 90 lean and 10 fat. That's probably too skinny for burger meat, really.
Definitely. Yeah, I think 80-20, you know, but I don't want to absolutely define that. I think people are going to decide what they want to do, but I would encourage you to get the best hamburger meat you can.
If you're inviting me
and
over
as fresh as possible.
If you're inviting me for burgers, please make it 80-20 and not skinnier than that. That's all I'm saying.
Right. And, you know, we have some wonderful local farms and, you know, I mean, I'll throw out a name because they do a great job, which is Rosetta. And it's a local farm and their hamburger meat is frankly some of the best hamburger meat I've ever had. So, you know, it's great when we can support locally. We always talk about these things and you know, I think also what you also want to consider with any beef that you're working with, USDA, is it going to be prime, choice, or select? And obviously, if you can afford prime with different cuts, it's fantastic. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with choice meat. And
so what are the differences between those grades?
You're talking about marbling and age of the animal. You know, and with marbling, you want to see almost like a fine net of marbling going through the piece of meat.
So it's not, you know, just marbling, one big edge of fat.
No, right, right.
It's something that's sort of through the
It kind of creates a web, and what happens is when it's a fine, you know, smaller pieces of fat in the meat, when it cooks, it melts and lubricates the meat basically as it's cooking.
That's what makes it tender.
Exactly, it makes it tender, makes the meat more tender, and it gives it flavor. Fat is flavor, and so it's absolutely important.
Tell me. Aging of beef. You always see this on restaurant menus, or you see, you know, dry aged beef.
Mm-hmm.
What is that about? Is it dry aged versus wet aged, or how old is the right age?
Well, there's no definition for that, but I think, you know, if something's aged 4 to 6 weeks, it's going to have great flavor. And, you know, obviously the longer the meat ages, the drier it gets. Now, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that it loses moisture as it ages. And, you know, your flavor intensifies. So, obviously, if you're losing moisture, you're intensifying flavor. And the longer something's aged, the more strong it becomes. So, you know, and that's not a negative thing. It's just, you know, that's what's interesting about aged meat is it becomes more intensely flavored, and that's why it's desirable.
It loses water, not fat.
Right.
So the meat is stronger, the fat is stronger, and the water goes out.
So that, you know, you want to look, you know, that's one of the reasons why aged meat is desirable. And the other thing you want to look for is it organic? Is it, you know, what is happening with the meat? Is it, are there any growth hormones? Are there any antibiotics? You know, obviously you want to try to avoid that. And you know, again, I'm not preaching here. We're just talking about things that you can look for. And you make your own decisions about what you want to buy.
Well, something naturally raised should have more natural flavor, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you see these terms thrown around, corn-fed, grass-fed, corn-finished. What is there? The difference, corn-fed is obviously more sugar, so more fat, right, for the cattle?
Some of the cattle are fed corn the last 120 days. I mean, everyone does, you know, every farmer has their way of doing things. And, you know, if you have grass-fed, they may be finished on corn. So there are a lot of different ways of farming. So, but that's a great piece of beef if it's fattened with corn feed. So that's a good way to go.
So natural flavor, more fat, that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to get into what beef Cindy actually wants to grill and what in the world to drink with it. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're on the grill. We're getting into, well.
Oh, no.
I'm going to grill you, Cindy. That's what's
God.
Going on.
Okay? Well, it kind of feels that way so far.
Oh, geez. No, we're going to play the beef cut game.
All right.
Okay?
Now we're going to have fun.
I'm going to throw out a beef cut.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're going to tell me what you're going to do with it.
Okay.
And then you can throw it back at me, and I'm going to tell you what you should do with it wine-wise.
Absolutely.
So for those people that are going to go to the store and you're going to find a cut of X that looks good to you, she's going to give you a good idea of what to do with it. And I'm going to give you a good idea of what in the world to take out of the salad to drink with it. How about that?
Okay.
And if you don't like
it,
you can
start grilling.
Blame us entirely. All right. So, we'll start with an easy one. Here's a soft pitch. So, flank steak. You love flank steak. So, what are you going to do with it?
Definitely going to, I think, cilantro, red onion, or you could go pomegranate juice and red onion and cilantro.
This is as
definitely
a,
some
as a
form
marinade?
Of acid. Yeah, I'm definitely going to marinate it. I think you can use a neutral oil, just a basic basic olive oil. Don't go towards extra virgin. It's not necessary with flank steak. And also, flank steak's inexpensive. So let's just, you know, kind of keep everything, you know, on the low cost end and, you know, do this wonderful marinade. Cool thing about flank steak is it cooks very quickly, especially if you want to eat it medium rare. So you can have a relatively hot grill, not too hot, not flaming hot, but, you know, say medium heat, medium to medium high heat, and watch your marinade. You're going to have product that's going to burn. Those red onions are going to burn once they hit the grill. So you marinate it, but kind of then, you know, if you will, scrape it off a little bit and then hit it with a little bit of fresh corn oil and pop it on the grill. And that's going to be excellent. And slice it on a bias. That's another thing we need to talk about is, you know, you want to always go against the grain of the meat when you're slicing.
So you're going to mark it on both sides pretty well for a minute or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you slice it, you're going to rest it off the fire, right?
Absolutely. Rest and then slice it against the grain. And also, you know, with something like that.
Why are you resting that piece of meat?
The blood needs to redistribute back through the piece of meat. So once the juices have kind of moved back through, heat causes the meat to constrict, and you want it to relax, basically. Let's relax the meat before we slice it, and think of it that way. What kind of red wine are we going to drink with that?
It doesn't have much fat, so you don't need that much tannin, and you kind of have zesty things with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, some crunchy young Rioja
that sounds good.
You know, an 08 or an 09 Crianza from Muga or Sierra Cantabria, one of the old school producers that makes it's medium body, good acidity. You serve it a little bit cool, you know, because chances are you're going to, you know, that's flank steak's the kind of thing that goes well with a mostly cold supper, you know, so you have like a potato salad out and a arugula salad out or something and that Rioja and a nice piece of cheese and, you know, maybe some Manchego if you want to be thematic about it.
Okay, sounds good. That's a good meal. What's next?
Next up, let's blow the bank. Let's talk about tenderloin.
Okay.
Tenderloin. So let's say it's birthday dinner for someone.
And
you love beef tenderloin. And
I
you
do.
Love not just any old beef tenderloin, but you also like Kobe or Snake River Farm tenderloin, the jazzy stuff that cost $8 million a pound.
Right. And I think with that, you need to consider if you are, you know, really breaking the bank and you're doing something like Snake River Farm tender, you need to cook that rare. Please cook it rare. You know, that piece of meat deserves that. That's the way it's going to be best. That fat's going to be incredible. The flavor is unbelievable. So let's just, you know, again, you have a medium to medium high heat grill, well oiled down, ready for your meat. You don't need to marinate that. You just, you know, I would literally just rub it with corn oil, salt and pepper, season it well. Make sure it's not too cold when it goes on the grill and grill it the whole piece. That's the great thing about a tenderloin. Now, if you can get the filet, that center piece, you know, if you're only cooking for two or four people, you can get the center, and that is a brilliant piece of meat.
That's the question that I have for you is with beef tenderloin, because you get it's an odd shaped muscle.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of almost like a fat short snake. You know, that's
right.
5 pounds, 7 pounds, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're talking about the filet mignon, the sort of fatter steaks in the center of that, but you also have pieces towards the end.
Yeah.
What do you want to ask your butcher for?
You know, again, if you can't get the filet mignon, and any butcher is going to know what you're talking about when you say that, which is the center of the tenderloin, you want the muscle off, the side muscle off. We call it the chain, and there's not a lot of edible meat on the chain. So, you know, I would just make sure that that's not attached. But really, you know, the center is great. Now, remember that tenderloin has almost no fat in it. So one of the things that I used to do back in the day was wrap, if I am, you know, let's say I don't want to roast the tender whole, I want maybe faster cooking time, and I'm going to cut into, or, you know, maybe we're having other pieces of meat, so we're only cutting like 4 ounce pieces of tenderloin, I wrap it in bacon. And you need a piece of string, butcher's twine, and just wrap it in bacon. And that is really delicious, one, if you like the flavor of bacon, and two, it gives it a little inherent smoke because of the bacon, and three, it bastes it while it grills and gives it some fat, which is just a fun way to eat the tenderloin.
So what else do you want to put on the plate with your good old tenderloin with bacon wrapped around it, if you're deft with that string?
Uh-huh. I think that, well, and also don't leave too long of a piece of string on it. It'll catch on fire, so don't do that.
No more flaming torch.
Yeah, no ignition, no igniting the tenderloin. I think that I love potatoes, so I would probably already have a potato crottin working in the oven, but I would grill some zucchini out of my garden this summer. And again, oh my God, I love grilled zucchini. Just brush it with a good extra virgin olive oil, a little salt and pepper, and then grill that, or maybe some grilled eggplant. All these wonderful things that you are either going to get locally at market or perhaps out of your own garden. And also, beef tenderloin loves tomato. So I might grill some tomatoes. I might do some fried green tomatoes.
You said that beef tenderloin doesn't have much fat,
mm-hmm.
right? So mm-hmm. do you do a sauce that has a lot of fat? I mean, isn't that one of the more old school things to...
Mm-hmm.
to do with that sort of
sure.
cut, with a filet mignon?
Sure.
So what sort of a sauce is that?
A mushroom cream sauce with a little Madeira in it. You could use button mushrooms or cognac. You could go that direction. That would certainly be delicious.
So let's see. If you're putting bacon with it, wine-wise, what in the world do it? See, it's funny. Beef tenderloin, I always think, and people think giant red wines for beef, but that's something that has rich, rich flavor, but it doesn't have that much fat to it.
Mm-hmm.
I always actually think Pinot Noir. I always think that whether it's Pinot Noir from California, because you don't need that much tannin,
mm-hmm.
but you want really interesting flavor and you want really interesting texture and fine structure, but you don't need that much. You really don't need that much as far as power. So whether it's Pinot from California or Oregon, people seem to be very, very into Willamette Valley Pinot right now, or Pinot from Burgundy, of course.
Yes.
But if it's something that's like simple, grilled, fresh, and a lot of veggies, that's not the time to bring out the 1990 Avon Romanée Premier Cru or something that is super crazy complex and secondary flavors. It's really more like juicy young 2008 or 2009, you know, village level, Gervais Chambertin, Chambon Musigny, something like that.
Sounds good.
That has some guts and a lot of fruit.
Can I have some of that while I'm grilling?
Really? Don't you think it's going to knock you off kilter a little bit?
No, not at all.
All right.
Not if I'm outside.
All right. What other favorite beef cuts do you have?
I think
grilling?
We should talk about porterhouse and T-bone because they're interesting. One is a little bit further
is
one, up the short
is one better than the other?
No, I don't think. Well, I mean, you know, everything's relative to your own opinion. But I think that the difference between the porterhouse and the T-bone really is the size of the tenderloin piece on the side. So T-bone has a little bit smaller piece of the tender. That's just the nature of where it comes from on the animal. But, you know, one of the things I think you have, I talk about this because I think it's an interesting thing to cook because you have the strip on the one side and the tender on the other. And, you know, those are two different pieces of meat. So it's sort of a challenge to cook a porterhouse or a T-bone really well.
So you build like two different fires? You suspend the one side in the air while the other one cooks?
No, but you might have one side a little bit, like if you do have, if it's a charcoal fire, you know, you may want the tenderloin on the side that's a little bit cooler. Or if you have a jet, you know, a gas-fired grill, you might have a little bit cooler side on your grill for your tenderloin side. But you just want to consider that when you're grilling it because it is two different structures and muscle structures. Obviously, the tenderloin's extremely tender, and the strip is a little bit more structure to it. So marinade, I would say, again, something very simple. You don't need acid there. You certainly could, but you don't need it. So I would probably do extra virgin and maybe some fresh rosemary or thyme or something, or even, those two from the garden. I think that's good, a little salt and pepper, and then you know, I think for accompaniment, I would definitely do chimichurri on there. And, you know, with chimichurri.
Chimichurri, the
Argentine
marinade. Argentine sauce.
Mm-hmm. I worked for a chef from Argentina when I was in Charleston. And I this is something that I have done ever since I knew Marcelo. And chimichurri can be made different ways. It can be made from dried herbs or fresh herbs. It can have tomato in it. It actually does not traditionally have fresh tomato in it, but that's how my chef made it. And he also used raspberry vinegar, which was not traditional. But, you know, fresh parsley, thyme, basil, a little bit of garlic, shallot, a good extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and then you can make your choice. Do you want lemon or lime juice in it? Do you want, you know, you can go that way. And the tomato is so great in there. A little fresh tomato from your garden again or local tomato this summer once we hit mid-July or so, and chop that fresh, add it to your relish at the end, and, you know, a nice bit of that on top of that T-bone or porterhouse right before serving it is absolutely delicious.
Well, you talk about it as a marinade too. So you would use the same sauce as a marinator and as
you could absolutely
and as finishing.
Absolutely.
That's I always have this image in the you know, and of the pampas of the, you know, the cowboys with the mm-hmm. giant haunch of beef up on on a spit and with like a paintbrush mm-hmm. and brushing it with chimichurri while it roasted up on that spit over a fire.
One of my favorite things that ever happened when I worked in Charleston with Marcelo was we went out onto one of the islands and had a party for all of the people that worked for him. And he went out there at like 6 o'clock in the morning, got the fire started, and had a very flat grill, very traditional Argentine way of cooking, big open surface. And he roasted a whole pig out there, and we made 5 gallons of chimichurri, and he put that in the cavity of the pig, and cooked that all day long. That was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life. And I had never seen anybody grill where they had whole chickens on the grill and whole peppers and whole links of pork sausages and, you know, just coils of sausages on the grill. Oh, my gosh. It was just...
Invite everybody and cook the farm party.
Oh, yeah. And then we would have Argentine red wine. So, you know, it was just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Argentine red wine because you're talking about porterhouses and T-bones and cuts, especially like strip Malbec, you know, which is sort of the prince of the Argentine red wines, or the pride of the Argentine red wines. Malbec is great because of that sort of floral and crunchy and herby and, you know, sweet black fruited character that it has. It's great with steaks like that off the grill and does great with the herby marinades, and because of the ripeness that you get down there and sort of the ridiculous sun at the higher altitudes. Mm-hmm. So there's an easy segue on
there
that.
There you go.
One.
Perfect.
All right. So you're talking about that great whole pig on the traditional Argentine mm-hmm. grill. What about maybe three other things that are fantastic to grill, whether it's particular kinds of sausages or chickens or little birds or mm-hmm. lamb cuts or... What are your favorites?
Well, again, if you're talking about, you know, if you can get a great chicken, there are chickens now that are cooled, air-cooled, and just absolutely, you know, can be wonderful. So... you know, we all love barbecue chicken or even just, again, an herb marinade on a chicken. But, you know, move into pork. I mean, there's so many wonderful cuts of pork. You know, the loin is obviously loves to be grilled. Any of those primal cuts, again, it kind of comes back to, and also with pork, you know, a pork chop, a pork loin chop with a bone in, just with the bone, it gives it flavor. With a nice piece of fat cap around it, it gives it flavor. Just watch those flare-ups. What do you like to grill, Tony?
Lamb. That's mm-hmm. you know, whether it's done as kebabs or mm-hmm. or you know, which is what you often see, which are, you know, little knuckles of the leg meat usually. Mm-hmm. Lamb leg steak, which has great flavor, but it's definitely one of the trickiest things. I mean, they're what, four muscles?
Yeah, they're
in
they're,
a lamb leg steak because mm-hmm. it's a cross section.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to, you know, you have to figure out, you're going to have with a lamb leg steak, you're going to have three different temperatures in the same cut.
Exactly.
When you take it off the grill. And usually, because of the size of it, you're probably looking at a 12 or 14 ounce piece of meat,
mm-hmm.
unless it's going to be incredibly skinny. So you're going to aim for the medium range, but just to get the flavor right and to melt off enough of the fat.
And there is so much flavor in a lamb leg steak.
Exactly. And you can use...
I think you have to just give up on worrying about how it might be a little bit tough here or there, because the flavor is fantastic, and part of it is very tender.
That's your favorite red wine in the world, or red wine from Chateauneuf du Pape, if I recall correctly.
Absolutely.
I think I do.
I think you know that.
and that's exactly, there's so much flavor and intensity, and it's almost like its own sauce. I mean, lamb leg steak with very little garnish, you know, with nice vegetables of the season, whether it's like artichokes this time of the year you know, or more of the traditional Provençal vegetables or ratatouille or something like that
mm-hmm.
on the side of it in midsummer.
What would you do with the artichokes? How would you cook them?
I'd rather have them poached mm-hmm. and then cooled and then grill them, or do them as a raw salad if you get the babies.
I love artichokes on a raw salad. So
you
good.
Just, yeah, you, it's just
lots of acid.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Lemon, vinegar, salt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, chop it very, very small. That's almost like a garnish, and I'll let that marinate for an hour or two and
mm-hmm.
That's and great oil.
I love raw button mushrooms in there too. I think those two things together are so good.
I've never
and maybe
done
a little Reggiano cheese, you know, maybe not for the lamb, but oh my gosh, that would be a great salad. Arugula. Can go on and on.
Cindy's going on the artichokes.
And what else do you like to grill?
Sausages. I'm a total sucker for the great sausages.
The
great different kinds of chorizo you get in Spain, the fresh chorizos that mm-hmm. If you have a wood-fired grill, sausage is done on that because the fat content is high, and that fat tends to get a great flavor from the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but chorizo in particular, because it has pimentón, which is that smoked paprika,
yeah,
that has a very particular flavor. Those are strong flavors. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something for, you know, if you're doing a mixed grill of a lot of strong vegetables and chorizos and, you know, pork chops or something like that, that's not a giant piece of money to get that done.
Right. Well, and isn't that what's fun about eating that way is, you know, you have a cut of pork, then you have some sausage meat. And again, if you have the chorizo with all that wonderful spice in it, and then you have some grilled poblano peppers and some grilled onions.
And red onions and green tomatoes.
That's fantastic.
And
how fun is that? And you can put that on a big platter and, you know, everything's done. You know, you don't even have to turn on the stove.
What's the kind of thing you can just dress it with good extra virgin olive oil, mm-hmm, and fresh herbs from your garden? And maybe a little lemon juice or a little sprinkle of good wine vinegar.
Absolutely.
And you're done.
That's a good, healthy way to eat, too.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about grilling seafood, all of the most healthful and honestly maybe my favorite things to grill in the entire world.
Okay, sounds good.
Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, and we're talking about grilling. And my question to you, Tony, is what is the best grilled food you've ever had in a restaurant?
That's a very, very easy question.
Good.
There is a restaurant I've been lucky enough to go to a couple of times in Spain.
Have I been there?
In Basque Country. Yes, you have.
Yes.
I went there the first time, and I told you immediately, like, this is the craziest thing.
Have to go.
So there's a restaurant that you cannot spell the name of, and it's difficult to pronounce because it's a Basque word, Echavarri.
Mm-hmm.
Echavarri is in the mountains in the foothills of the mountains, maybe 45 minutes an hour out of San Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman who's a chef there left his job as a scientist and he decided that grilling food is what he wanted to do. And he grills everything. He grills caviar.
Mm-hmm.
He grills oysters.
Butter.
He grills butter.
Well, that was a little.
He grills raw mushrooms. You did not like
the
grilled butter.
I did not like
butter.
The grilled
You're
butter.
You're completely freaked
that
out.
That was a little odd.
He grills everything
it tasted
over.
Tasted like a cigarette.
Some people like butter and cigarettes, maybe. I don't.
But
I understand.
His food is absolutely amazing.
It is because of his science
brilliant.
Background, he has crafted all these different ways to grill things you wouldn't normally think of, or little funny like custom lobster holders. So he grills whole live lobsters in these particular baskets. And, you know, you see the funny little implements you see at the you know, hardware store or home center or whatever for grilling things. Not only this guy has mm-hmm. very specific things. He has cans or little tins to hold caviar in so we can grill caviar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, little tiny individual shrimp, little clam. Different. He has three different ones for different kinds of clams.
Mm-hmm.
But everything from all these different seafood products, the sea cucumber at this place, unbelievable. And the big gambas and chigala, all kinds of things.
What is that?
Chigala is a shellfish, mm-hmm. maybe a pretty strong kind of prawn almost.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think we had that when I was there. The clams.
We only have them once in a while. The clams are amazing.
And the turbo.
Turbo, yeah, the whole turbo in its own
grilled.
In its own little basket, all over wood, you know,
brilliant.
Over wood fire, and he's got four different wood fires going of different sizes with different woods
mm-hmm.
to do different things. It's because I mean it's Basque Country, it's all forest, but it's less than an hour away from the sea and a lot of the best fishing in
Absolutely.
The world, you know, from the Bay of Biscay. So, and then he also does beef and the chuleta or chuleton. Chuleton's the sort of giant chops. It's always a giant ribeye of sorts that. They do, and it's the beef from Galicia, you know, the Gallego breed that is a little bit like the Tuscan beef that you see that's pretty heavily muscled, and they age it for a long time. It has great flavor and very lean. And anyway, yeah, we have 18 courses or something of different grilled things
experience.
In that restaurant.
Yes.
And probably 18 bottles of Muga Rioja over there with one Muga.
Muga.
And Jorge Ordóñez.
Very good.
But yeah, that's definitely the... I don't think that you can do a better grilling experience than that.
What are the grapes in that region?
In Rioja,
mm-hmm.
Tempranillo is the most important one.
Mm-hmm.
There are three others that go into the blend, but Mazuelo and Garnacha. But Tempranillo is what, that's the pride of it, just like Ribera del Duero.
Any white wines in that region or not
yeah,
notable?
You see whites along the coast.
Okay.
And Chakuli is the...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and they're from two different towns that they're important Chakuli, but light, 11% alcohol, very like apple-y, lightly spritzy, very fresh breakfast wine.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Breakfast wine. It may sound strange, but yeah, breakfast wine there along the coast with like preserved fish and little toast and red onions out of the garden, and it's a pretty hearty breakfast.
Good way to start the day.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're on the Basque Coast. Let's talk about grilling seafood. Mm-hmm. What are your favorite grilled seafood things to eat? What do you like to make at home?
I love calamari on the grill. I think that's just so amazing. What a great way to eat calamari. And I don't know that a lot of people think of that.
Well, the trick with calamari is actually getting fresh calamari, right?
Right, right, right.
Because 99% of the calamari you get out is frozen.
You just want to make sure it's fresh and you know, cleaning it. If you're cleaning it yourself, that's a little bit of a process and maybe something you might want to look up. I can't really describe that on the radio, but you know, I think that octopus, calamari, and of course there are all, you know, so many different types of shrimp you could throw.
Cuttlefish, yeah. Mm-hmm, that's, mm-hmm. Cephalopods are definitely one of my favorite things to cook at home, to cook in the restaurants and whether it's on a grill or on the plancha. Mm-hmm. There's a restaurant in Barcelona, Suque d'Amaral, is the first place I had calamari cooked on a hot grill. It was just marinated very lightly and oil and lemon. Mm-hmm. And he was grilling like fat slices of green apple at the same time. And the calamari. And calamari, you know, fresh like that, grilling the whole tubes and tentacles. The tentacles get a little bit crispy, and the tubes just get a little bit caramelized, and you just kind of roll them around and hopefully don't drop them through the grates. And the apple will just mark on both sides. And he just chopped them both together as like a salad with good oil and a drop of wine vinegar. And oh, my goodness, that was crazy good. The thing is, all the juice that's on the cutting board from the apple and from the calamari, that is the sauce. That's sort of the whole ballgame, is you bring all of that out by cooking it just a little bit.
Good
point.
You're
just getting it warm. You're just caramelizing the outside a little bit. If you cook it hard, like you're like, now is it done? I'm scared it's not done. As soon as you start thinking that, you've already overcooked it.
Absolutely.
And it has no flavor, and it'll be like chewing shoelaces.
Right. It's a quick process, which is another advantage with making something like that, that you can make dinner so quickly with something like calamari or cuttlefish or, you know, any of those.
That's the kind of thing. If you want to serve, say, tapas at home, and you're going to do a meal and it's all on your grill and everyone has a glass of wine, if you have a cutting board handy, you literally can make that same dish in a matter of 2 minutes for 10 people. All you need are spoons. You know, you do the dish in a bowl, and you scoop out a spoon and pass them like hors d'oeuvres, and everyone gets a bite of that with a glass of wine. That's a perfect little thing.
That's great.
To get them started. I think if I have a biggest passion in seafood, it's probably grilling whole fish.
Yeah.
And I know that you love steaky fish off the grill.
Mm-hmm.
Any
tuna,
favorites?
Swordfish. You know, anything like that. And those are such quick cooking fish because you're probably going to eat them medium rare. I would. And, you know, I love.
Is it okay to eat fish like, say, a piece of salmon or a piece of tuna? Why would you eat it medium rare instead of cooking it through?
It's a different texture. And, you know, I think you just taste the fish more, quite frankly. I love raw fish, so, you know, I'm happy to eat salmon tartare, tuna tartare, and I almost prefer sometimes with fish like that, I think I prefer them raw to cooked. So if I am going to grill a piece of salmon, I'm definitely grilling it rare.
When you're looking for salmon fillets, tuna fillets for grilling, is there a particular, you'll see sometimes in stores you'll see tuna steaks or you know, salmon steaks, things like that. Would you rather have a fillet or a steak, and how do you tell quality on those things?
Well, if you have a whole piece of fish to look at, you're looking for clear eyes, red gills, and a firm texture, and obviously smell. You know, you want it to smell good.
So you actually ask the guy at the fish counter, can I smell that fish?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
I think people are so shy sometimes. I remember my great-grandmother going to Lexington Market when I was a little kid and taking me along with, and she was just the devil to people to make sure she got exactly what she wanted, the way that
Absolutely.
She wanted it for her family. It's a... to cook it.
There's
so,
nothing wrong with that.
No, no question.
Scallops are great on the grill, too. And such another quick cook. And
Seemed like a tricky thing to cook. You're talking about sea scallops.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yes. Yeah, definitely. You need the larger scallop out of the shell. But if you have your grates are pretty close together, you shouldn't have any problem grilling a large scallop. And those, I always cook those to medium rare. So that's, you know, you're talking about 2 or 3 minutes on the grill. And you would mark them on both sides and, you know, a little bit of oil and salt. And by that time, you're done and take them off the grill.
one of the tricks with any of those kinds of seafood is because they're quick cooked. Let's say it's even it's a tuna fillet that's a nice size. It's almost cut like a filet mignon. You're still only cooking it a minute or two on each side tops to get it marked and get it to rare, medium rare. When you take those fillets off, you have to have everything on the plate ready to go.
Right.
So what do you like on, let's say someone's cooking tuna at home on the grill. You know, 3 minutes have gone by, and the 3 minutes is cooking on the grill. They've got 3 minutes to get things on the plate. What belongs on that plate?
Well, especially in the summertime, I would probably have an Erica Vera salad ready to go, or green bean salad, you know, something crunchy and bright and fresh with a little olive oil, and I would hit that with lemon juice at the last moment. And I love olives with tuna. So, you know, Picholine olives, Niçoise olives, Niort olives, any olive with a lot of good flavor and high quality olive. You could crush them, you could chop them and make a relish. And
almost like a quick tapenade or something with Niçoise olives for tuna. So what would you put in that tapenade? Because that's a great classic
accompaniment. Capers, the chopped olive oil, or you could even use corn oil. It's a little bit gilding the lily using olive oil with olives. And although some olives packed in oil, like the tagliatelle, those olives, that oil is so brilliant. I always use the oil that they're packed in to make my relish. And I said capers and a little bit of garlic or shallot, something like that.
And the tagliatelle, is almost like a trick, the tagliatelle olive oil. I use a little bit of that and a little bit of lemon peel and rub them in a mortar and pestle together with a little bit of crunchy salt and then use that to brush the fish while it's cooking on the grill.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And serve that with, if you boil new potatoes and cut a couple of fat slices, you can smoke them lightly on the grill when, with the skin still on them while you're just to get them warm.
Yes.
While the fish is grilling, and then serve it with an olive relish like you're talking about with the tagliatelles.
Yeah, you definitely want to have your mise en place and all your accompaniment ready to go before you grill a quick food like that.
A tuna is your best excuse for red wine with fish, too, for sure.
There you go.
Because of the texture, because of the flavors in that. And look there, Cindy, you get to drink from the Rhone Valley again.
Excellent.
Nice Côte de Rhone Village or a Châteauneuf-du-Pape or a Lirac or one of the Grenache-based wines, not a Syrah-based wine.
All right.
So how about a rockfish? Maryland is rockfish country.
Oh, it's a great fish.
So, do you like that hole on the grill?
Absolutely. That would be fantastic. I would definitely put some fresh thyme and in the belly and a little bit of sea salt in that belly and, you know, score the outside of the fish so that it cooks correctly. And, obviously you have to scale it. If it's a whole fish, scale it, score it, season it, oil it, grill it, put the top down, let it smoke a little bit. Good.
So let's back up a second and go through. Okay, you're at the store and you're asking for a whole fish and you see a nice rockfish.
Mm-hmm.
It's what, maybe 2-3 pounds, right?
Yes.
And that'll feed from the...
probably four people.
Maybe if it's 3 pounds, probably four people, for the whole fish.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you're doing dinner for four. So you would ask them at the... You know, you see the bright eye and you smell the fish and it smells nice and clean and just a little bit like sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to ask them to scale it.
I would definitely ask them to scale it. Scaling a fish at home is a big mess.
It's a mess, and there's scales flying all over your
kitchen. Exactly, yeah. You won't
then
like,
your cat gets
you won't
one of
like
the scales and runs all over the house with it like it's, you know,
yes,
like a special treat. So you scale the scaled fish there. They've gutted the fish already, right? So then you get home, you unwrap the fish, and you said, so the belly, the bit of cavity that's there, so you season it inside the cavity?
Mm-hmm. Sea salt. I'd put some whole pieces of thyme in there.
Maybe a couple of lemon slices or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of fresh shallot. And then the outside of the fish.
You just want to take a sharp pointed knife and score very, don't go too far into the fish, but score that skin so that it cooks correctly on the grill.
It's literally like just making sort of cross hatch, marks on the skin of the fish so that it releases a little bit of the fat from the skin and the heat transmits evenly all along the
exactly.
surface of the fish.
Exactly.
And so then you oil your grill grates down.
Mm-hmm.
And then how high for the grill temperature?
Again, I would be careful with the heat, so I'd probably keep it at a medium heat.
And one of the great things in with restaurant grills is that the commercial ones, you can tilt them at an angle so you can control that distance from the flame and you can cook things slowly. At home, that's tough. So
yeah,
you're gonna have
my grill at home does not do that. That's one of the things I don't like about my grill. I wish it did do that.
So you have to really be careful that you don't have that too hot to start, or you burn that skin, and all you're going to do is smell like kerosene-y burnt fish skin, and you just spent this money on a beautiful piece of fish that you just destroyed. Mm-hmm. So you're talking low medium for the heat, and then cooking it to a rock is a fish that you want probably medium well.
Yes.
So it's still juicy.
You want it to be moist, but yeah, you.
But cooked mostly.
You want it relatively cooked through. Well, and also you're going to have to pull that fillet off of the fish, so you're going to end up deboning it for your guests. So you do want it to be cooked almost.
And it's going
to
carry over cooking a little bit when you take it off the grill. So it's probably, if you take it off medium to medium well,
you're going to be fine.
You're probably going to be fine. It's going to land on the medium well ranges where you usually want that kind of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so, how long do you think on a side for 3 pound? Maybe
5-6 minutes.
Yeah, probably
something like that. That's not the easiest thing to do, to cook a piece of whole fish. This is a little skill involved in this. But it's a great thing to do, and it's a great way to eat the fish.
It's going to sound
to be moist and gorgeous.
It is one of the special treats. I think an investment in your own education is probably get 2 fish the first time that you do it.
Yeah, really.
Because
practice.
The worst thing that happens is you nail it the first time, and you can make another one tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. Good.
But if you don't nail it the first time, then you take the fish is probably 5-6 minutes on a side, and while it's grilling, are you brushing it?
Yeah, I would delicately. Again, you don't want excess oil, or it's going to flare up on you. But yes, you want to keep all food moist while it's grilling. You have to keep a certain amount of oil on it.
So maybe it's oil, a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of salt that you kind of brush it with lightly on the non-grilling side. Because when it turns, then it has a little bit of, it also transmits the heat through that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sea salt or kosher salt are perfect. Either one are perfect for that.
And you're not flipping it back and forth. It's literally 5 to 6 minutes on a side and then one turn. And you're probably, for a 3 pound fish, you're talking about probably 2 large fish spatulas to turn that guy, or a giant pair of tongs.
Yeah, because as it cooks, it's going to become very delicate. So, yes.
And then when it comes off to bone it, you rest it for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Just like it's the one thing that people often do with fish is they think, meat they may have figured out to rest, but they don't often do that with a piece of fish for a minute. And you really do have to do that so that the juices flow back and to where they should. If you don't, then the bones don't go anywhere.
Right. Well, you want to be able to just lift that meat off of the bones. So that's, you want it to have steamed and sort of cooked itself to that point where you can just simply lift it off the bone structure of the fish.
Yeah. So you have your 4 nice fillets and a nice sauce with that, maybe some Reglio, traditional Sicilian sauce with that. So lots of capers, lemon. Some fish stock, if you have fish stock, fresh herbs, usually laurel bay is something that is steeped for, like if you have fresh bay, steeped in that sauce for a day or two when you keep it around, and extra virgin olive oil, lemon juice, sometimes tomato, definitely a little bit of spring garlic if you have it, but fresh garlic for sure is in there, and that's the kind of thing that's just ladled over ladled over a fish like that.
So Tony, with all this wonderful fish, what would you suggest wine-wise?
Whites from the Italian coast, a very easy thing to do, super Mediterranean thing to grill fish in this way. So look for Verdicchio is an easy one. Vermentino is another one. Those are 2 grapes, not super expensive, a lot of flavor. Both are almost saline fresh. They do great with fish like that. Also rosés from Provence, like Bandol.
This is Cindy Wolfe and Tony Foreman. Thanks for listening to us on Foreman and Wolfe on Food and Wine. We had a lot of fun talking about grilling, and we'll talk a little bit more later in the summer about grilling as we start to get in some of our wonderful local farm product and you all get your gardens going strong. Really excited to talk further about this subject.